Okay, we're in Genesis chapter 27 this morning. So last time we looked at the sole chapter in the book of Genesis that's really dedicated to the life of Isaac. And it's going to move on pretty quickly from Isaac. At the end of chapter 25, we read about the birth of Isaac and Rebekah's two sons, their twins, Esau and Jacob. And before we get started today, we're actually going to go back there and just go over that passage a little bit more because it ties very much into chapter 27. So go to Genesis chapter 25. And actually, let's start in verse 20. So it says, "And Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister to Laban the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived." So you can see Isaac was a spiritual man. He desired something. He went to the Lord for it. He sought the Lord. That's the kind of man that he was. And the Lord was gracious to him and heard his prayer. And that's very important. You know, when you have this relationship with God and you're in his grace, he's willing to do stuff for you. He's willing to answer prayer. He does that. He's a real God. Verse 22. "And the children struggled together within her, and she said, 'If it be so, why am I thus?' And she went to inquire of the Lord." So she also goes to God. When she's got questions, she wants to understand things, she goes to the Lord. So that's the kind of person that she was also. Verse 23, "And the Lord said unto her, 'Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger.'" God gave her this word. I don't think she ever forgot it. I think this is something that she kept in her heart and pondered it. Just like, you know, when the angel came to Mary and she kept those things in her heart, and then the prophets came to her and the prophetess and they'd tell her things, and she kept those things in her heart and pondered those sayings. And that never left her. This was about her children. That's something that she was very interested in. She went to God for this answer. It's something she never forgot. And she understood Abraham. God was going to bless the whole world through Abraham and through his seed. And then that seed was Isaac. And then this thing was going to continue on. And now there's two sons. And she's understanding God is already making a choice here. He's already choosing who's going to be the next one. He's going to be the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not Esau. And he's making that very clear already. Verse 24, "And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over like an hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them." That's 60. Verse 27. "And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field. And Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents." And we can see, we looked at this before. They're two manner of people already. And this is even before they became nations. They're two manner of people. Verse 28. "And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob." And you say, well, that's a pretty shallow kind of love. I mean, you love a kid because you eat his venison. And you're right. That is a pretty shallow kind of love. There's different kinds of love. They're not all the same. You know, the first time in the Bible where the word love is used is back in chapter 22, when God speaks to Abraham and he says, "Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, Well, that's a deep love of a father for his son. It's a deep love and appreciation for the promise and the blessing and the hope that God gives. Thy only son whom thou lovest. That's a deep love. You know when the word love first appears, though? The root word, just love, the first time it's used in the Bible? It's going to be in this chapter. It's going to be talking about how Isaac loves meat. He loves savory meat. Guess what? That's a completely different kind of love. It is a shallow kind of love. It has nothing to do. It doesn't mean he cares about the meat. Okay? He just likes it. So what we see, and this is the shallower kind of love, is that it mentions here, Isaac loved Esau. It doesn't mean he cared about him more than he cared about Jacob. It just means he had kind of a favorite son because there were things about him that he liked. Because he did eat of his venison. But Rebekah loved Jacob. And her love for Jacob was probably a little bit deeper that it's talking about. I think she was really keeping in mind what God had said to her about these children. Verse 29, and Jacob sawed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint. Therefore was his name called Edom, and we talked about that. His name means red. And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. Well, that's kind of a snotty thing to do, isn't it? Like, you're going to take advantage of your brother. He's in need. Yeah, I mean, what I'm going to say about this chapter that we're looking at today, there's four people that it really mentions: Isaac, Rebekah, Esau, and Jacob. And none of them are without fault. I place some blame on all of them for the fiasco that ends up happening there. But and Jacob is, you know what? He's going to come out the good in the end. But he's got some struggles and some things to work through. He's got some things that God wants him to overcome. And yeah, he was the kind of guy to take advantage of his brother like this. And he did that. But he also had an appreciation for the valuable things, the precious things. He knew the value of this birthright, and guess what? Esau didn't. So Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. And Esau said, behold, I am at the point of die. He probably wasn't. And what profit shall this birthright do to me? And Jacob said, swear to me this day. And he swore unto him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. This is extremely significant. So, first of all, I want to say that the birthright, it's not probably like a physical token or like a document, like a birth certificate or something. This is something that Esau swore to him. He swore an oath to him. It was like a verbal thing. But guess what? Esau knew that he did it. Jacob knew that he did it, and God knew that he did it. And what is this thing that he's selling away for a morsel of meat, for a bowl of pottage? He's selling the birthright. What does that mean? That's his right, the rights that he's supposed to have as a firstborn son by birth. He's selling that away for a bowl of pottage. And in the New Testament, in Hebrews chapter 12, it calls him profane. He was a profane person. He didn't respect the precious, the sacred, the holy things. He had no view for eternity and for the future. He was focused on, what can I put in my stomach right now? I'll sell the rest because I can't see it. It's not right in front of me. I want what I can have now. And that was his problem. So already you can see these are two different kinds of people. And the thing is, that was only the beginning. Like, the birthright was something immaterial, something you couldn't really see yet. You couldn't really feel it yet. This was all about words and it was about faith. Or lack of faith in this point. But now we're getting to the rest of that story. So we're in Genesis chapter 27. Let's just start reading in verse 1. I'm not sure how far we're going to get into this chapter. It's a very long chapter, so we're not going to do it all today. But let's just start reading in verse 1. It says, "And it came to pass that when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his eldest son, and said unto him, My son. And he said unto him, Behold, here am I." So it says Isaac was old. At this point, it says at the end of the last chapter, Esau was 40 years old when he took his first wives there. So he's 40 years old. He was born when Isaac was 60. We just read that. So Isaac is at least 100 years old, probably a little bit more than that. Just a quick fact here, he's actually not going to die until he's 180. So he's like, oh, I'm old, I'm going to die any day now, I got to hurry up and do this. Actually, he lives another 80 years, but we just don't know when that day is going to come.
Right.
Verse 2, and he said, "Behold, now I'm old, I know not the day of my death." I just said that. Verse 3, "Now therefore take, I pray thee, thy weapons, thy quiver, and thy bow, and go out to the field and take me some venison, and make me savory meat, such as I love, and bring it to me, that I may eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die." So what's going on here? Let's talk a little bit about the relationship between Isaac and Esau, okay? This transaction with the birthright that was made before, it might have been years before. I don't know exactly when it happened. I just know that it happened. And nobody else probably knew about it.
Right.
Like I said, this thing was done in private. Jacob's in the kitchen, you know, he's got this bowl of pottage. And Esau comes in from the field. And it doesn't mention anybody else being there. If his parents were there and Esau's like, okay, I'll sell the birthright. You think his parents would have had anything to say about that? What? Yeah, probably knocked some sense into him. But anyway, it doesn't seem like anybody else knew about it. So Isaac's getting old. He's like, okay, well, I don't know when I'm going to die. So I just got to make sure I do this before I die. And the blessing goes to who? The firstborn. Now, Isaac doesn't, he's not aware that the birthright was sold. So, who does that? It would take a real fool to do that. And so, I'm going to call my firstborn and I'm going to bless him. And like we saw, Isaac had a special love for Esau. He enjoyed him, you know, like, sometimes this happens, even with like Christian parents, okay? You have children, right? Dad's got you. Oh, you guys got children, right? Except for me. but anyway, you have children, and even if they don't, they're not the cream of the crop, maybe the most spiritual, you know, if their heart isn't really focused on the Lord yet, still you see the accomplishments of these children and you take pleasure in them, you know? Hey, that's my son, you know. He's my firstborn. He's the strongest one. He's a hunter. He goes out and man, he really gets that deer, you know. He's captain of the football team, you know. You know what I'm talking about? That's what it's talking about here. That's the kind of relationship that Isaac had with his son Esau, and he's not aware of the birthright situation. So yeah, of course I'm gonna bless my firstborn and I'm going to pass on that blessing. So, you know what I want you to do, Esau? Go out to the field and get some of that venison. I really like your venison when you make that savory meat. That's your mom's recipe, isn't it? Yeah, I just love that stuff. So why don't you go out, give me some of that. I'll eat that, and I'll be in this really good mood, and I'll give you a great blessing. Okay? That's kind of what's going on here. So, verse 5. But one other I'm not sure if I made this clear, but one thing that I want to make really clear, this is what happens because of the birthright. Go to, I mentioned this before already, but let's just turn there real quick. Go to Hebrews chapter 12. And we'll come back to this passage next week. Next week we'll focus more on Esau and about how this situation turns out. But for now, look what it says in chapter 12, Hebrews chapter 12, verse 16. It says, "Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. For you know how that afterward..." Afterward is now. That's chapter 27. "Afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected." Now that thing that was just something I didn't really care about because it wasn't right in front of my face. Yeah. It was just a verbal thing, you know. Yeah. It was just confessing something with my mouth and swearing. And yeah, I mean, that's no big deal. Now it's supposed to actually bear fruit. That blessing was the inheritance that he was supposed to get, or at least part of it. And he's not supposed to get it. He's not supposed to get it. He traded it away.
Right.
It's like you got a check for $1 million, but then before you cash the check, because it's still a long ways away, you say, it's just a piece of paper. What do I need this for? Give me a Whopper, you know, give me a sandwich. Yeah, that's basically what he did.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so back in chapter 27, so Isaac sends Esau out into the field to get this venison. And then verse 5, it says, "And Rebekah heard when Isaac spake to Esau his son. And Esau went to the field to hunt for venison and to bring it. And Rebekah spake unto Jacob, her son, saying, Behold, I heard thy father speak unto Esau, thy brother, saying, Bring me venison and make me savory meat that I may eat and bless thee before the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to that which I command thee." So Rebekah has a problem with this. And there could be, I'm not sure what combination of these factors it was. It might have been a little bit of all three. But I already mentioned the word of God came to her during her pregnancy and told her about these boys. She knew already that God was favoring one. And one was going to turn out to be that seed that was going to carry on the promise. And she knew that it was going to be the younger. She knew it was going to be Jacob. So she's thinking about that. She's kept that throughout her life. She may have been aware of the birthright situation. I don't know. Maybe Jacob told her. I can't rule out that possibility. So that might be part of it. She may have known, like, hey, actually, Jacob, that's Jacob's birthright now. He's the one that's supposed to get this blessing. Esau traded it away. And the other thing is, Jacob was clearly her favorite son. So, yeah, she's... I think what Rebekah was trying to do, I think she had a kind of a noble intention there, but she's also got kind of a Sarah vibe going on. Remember back in Genesis 16 with Sarah, you know, I mean, Abraham receives these promises about his son, you know, being, you know, the seed and all the promises coming through him. And that was the great hope. And then Sarah's like, well, you don't have any children because I'm barren. So I've got this plan. How about I just meddle a little bit and we'll work something out to fulfill God's plan.
There you go.
And that's kind of what Rebekah was doing here. She's like, I know what God's going to do. Let me go ahead and do it for him. Let me just meddle a little bit. Yeah. So that's what she's doing. So this is her plan. Verse 8. "Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to that which I command thee. "Go now to the flock and fetch me from thence two good kids of the goats, and I will make them savory meat for thy father, such as he loveth." Again, I said, Esau probably got the recipe from his mom. Verse 10, "And thou shalt bring it to thy father that he may eat and that he may bless thee before his death." So that's the plan. Jacob has a problem with this. Is it because Jacob is just such an honest fellow and he just can't bear to tell this lie because that would just be against the Lord and he just can't bear to do it? No, not exactly. So verse 11, "And Jacob said to Rebekah his mother, Behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. My father, peradventure, will feel me, and I shall seem to him as a deceiver, and I shall bring a curse upon me and not a blessing." So this is Jacob's concern. He's concerned about getting caught. He knows if he gets caught, he's not going to get the blessing. He's probably going to end up with a curse instead. He's not concerned about the curse of God. He's concerned about the curse of his father. Okay? Now, I want to say this. Everybody's really concerned about this blessing here. That was a big deal. It was a cultural thing. But beyond that, like I said, Isaac was a spiritual man who walked with God, lived his life in the grace of God. He had this special relationship with God, just like Abraham did, just like Noah did. Okay? That blessing meant something because it was that man going before God and invoking his blessing and saying, "God, bless my son. Do this for him and do this for him and bless him." And guess what? God hears those prayers. Amen. And that blessing was something special.
Yes, sir.
You go back to back in the book of Genesis, to Genesis chapter 9. Well, you don't have to turn there, but just remember, like, when that situation happened where Noah got drunk and his three sons came in, and what happened there? He ends up blessing two of those sons, and then he cursed the son of the third one. And that was a big deal. Two of those sons really got blessed. He spoke this thing because he's a man of God. He's a prophet, and he gives this word, and God does it. Okay, it's not that Noah's words had any power. It's this relationship that he had with God, and that God's like, you know what? That's my man. He said that he blesses, he curses. I'm doing it. Think about Elisha the prophet. You remember when those kids came out and made fun of him? "Thou bald head," he cursed them in the name of the Lord. What happened? Two she-bears came out of the wilderness and tore up all those children. Yeah, that's the blessing is very, it's a very significant thing. It's a very powerful thing. And so is the curse. And it's very telling about this passage. They all were seeking the blessing for this boy or that boy. And then also, what does Rebecca do? Verse 13, when Jacob's concerned about the curse, his mother said unto him, "Upon me be thy curse, my son. Only obey my voice and go fetch me them." Let me tell you something. If they took the blessing seriously, they took the curse seriously too.
Yeah.
These were not vain words. This was not a light thing. Okay? What is Rebecca doing? She's saying, you know what? If this thing turns into a curse, I'll bear it. I will risk the curse. I'm willing to bear it for your sake, my son. Why? You say, well, this is a deceitful, kind of dirty thing that his mother gets him to do. Yeah, that's true. This chapter's kind of a mixed bag. You see some of this and some of that. That's true. It wasn't a very honest thing to do. It probably wasn't the right way to go about things. But also, you can see some precious things here. That she's willing to take the curse for the sake of her son. Go to Galatians chapter 3. Sometimes you read about these figures in the Old Testament. I think about Moses. Remember when the children of Israel sinned and made that golden calf? And Moses is like, Lord, blot my name out of the book and save them.
Right.
You know what that was? That was the Spirit of Christ that was in them. Why did Rebecca say this? I believe it was also the Spirit of Christ in her. Galatians chapter 3. And again, the situation's a little bit different. It's not talking about exactly the same thing here, but you can see the same theme. Galatians 3:10. For as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse, for it is written, cursed is every one that continueth not in all things which are written in the book of the law to do them. But that no man is justified by the law in the sight of God, is it is evident, for the just shall live by faith. And the law is not of faith, but the man that doeth them shall live in them. So the point that he's making is everyone that doesn't do the things of the law that's supposed to, they're under a curse. Verse 13, Christ hath redeemed us from the curse of the law, being made a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone that hangeth on a tree, that the blessing of Abraham might come on the Gentiles through Jesus Christ, that we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith. Boy, that's relevant. What are we talking about here in Genesis 27? We're talking about the blessing of Abraham. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's talking about passing on this blessing of Abraham. And Christ was made a curse for us so that we could inherit that blessing. And that's what Rebecca was trying to do for her son. She believed so much in the word that God told her about that boy that she was willing to become a curse herself.
Yep.
In order for him to get the blessing that he was supposed to get from God. The only thing is, she didn't really go about it a great way. You don't want to teach your son to be deceitful and to, you know, meddle and, you know, try and put things in your own hands. So, you know, I'm just trying to be fair. Some of the things, like I said, she had kind of noble intentions here, but not really a little too much of that Sarah vibe. Okay, verse 14. So it says, and he went and fetched and brought them to his mother, the two kids, and his mother made savory meat such as his father loved. Thought about this, actually. Two kids. That's two little goats. That's a lot of meat, ain't it, for one guy? Oh, he must have had quite an appetite. anyway, verse 15. And Rebekah took goodly raiment of her eldest son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them upon Jacob, her younger son. And she put the skins of the kids of the goats upon his hands and upon the smooth of his neck. Well, why is she doing this? Well, he can't see. So how does he figure out who people are? Well, he listens to them and he feels them. Okay? He's got two sons. He's got a smooth one and a hairy one. Okay? that's the way they're described in the Bible. A hairy man and a smooth man. Okay? So they know he's gonna feel Jacob when he comes for this blessing. And so this is Rebecca's plan, that she's gonna put Esau's clothes on him, and she's also going to take the skins of the kids of the goats upon him. Well, maybe that's why they needed two. Just so they have more skins. Because that's what she did with him. She put the skins of the kids of the goats upon his hands and upon the smooth of his neck. Which is pretty amazing in itself. Basically means Esau was as hairy as a goat. And that's how you're gonna convince his dad. Yeah, interesting. So that's the disguise. Obviously, they can't do anything about his voice. And Isaac's going to pick up on that. Verse 17, and she gave the savory meat and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. And he came unto his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I. Who art thou, my son? Well, why does he ask that? Because he just sent out his son Esau on an errand. And now somebody comes back in and says, My father. So Isaac, you know, he's getting up there. You know, maybe lost a couple of marbles or whatever. But the situation is that he just sent out a son. His son comes back, says, My father. So which son are we talking about here? Let me just make sure. Who art thou, my son? And Jacob said unto his father, I am Esau, thy firstborn. I have done according as thou badest me. Arise, I pray thee, sit and eat of my venison, that thy soul may bless me. So he claims to be Esau. He knows about the errand that Esau was just sent on. So, okay, he's starting to sell this thing a little bit. Verse 20, And Isaac said unto his son, How is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son? And he said, Because the Lord thy God brought it to me. Again, Jacob, he turns out pretty good in the end, but he's got some major flaws right now. This is something you don't want to do. Look, it's bad enough you tell a lie. And then a lot of times what happens if you're really invested in that lie, what happens? Somebody investigates a little bit and you tell a deeper lie just to cover up the first lie. And he does that, but also at the same time, he invokes God's name to make the deception work. He's like, my dad's a real spiritual guy. You know, he just loves to talk about God. And so, let me just throw this in there. I got it so quickly because the Lord thy God brought it to me. He doesn't say the Lord my God. At this time, the Lord is not his God. He says later on, when he prays to the Lord, he's like, Lord, if you bring me back to my father's house in peace, then you'll be my God. At this time, he's Isaac's God, but he's not Jacob's. And Jacob is just using his name to deceive someone. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that do that today.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'll tell you what, a lot of them are in pulpits.
Yep.
They use the name of God to deceive people and get what they want.
Right.
What this actually reminds me of, actually I didn't write down the reference, but kind of reminds me of the first thing that came to mind was Absalom. When he steals the hearts of the men of Israel, and then he's going to go to Hebron and proclaim himself king. So what does he tell David, his father? I got to go and pay a vow to the Lord in Hebron. So let me go. And Jacob's kind of following along that path here.
Yep.
He's a supplanter. He's a conniver. And he's using the name of God wrongfully. By the way, that's kind of interesting. I mentioned before, I think everybody in this chapter is a little bit at fault in one way or another. I think Isaac should have had a little bit better discernment there.
Right.
One thing that you'll see about Esau, he's mentioned a lot in the Bible, I mean, especially Genesis. He's mentioned later on in different books. He's mentioned in Hebrews. It never mentions Esau ever saying anything about God or anything about faith. He had no relationship with God. He wasn't seeking God. He did. His life was entirely secular and carnal. And everything that he said, the most noblest of his intentions ever were to please his parents. But it stopped there. He was just a natural man. Carnal and secular. And Esau would have known, or I'm sorry, Isaac would have known that Esau wasn't just going to come up here and say this, because he was not a spiritual man. He wasn't just going to come in and, start thanking God. But anyway, So Jacob started to sell this story, and verse 21, and Isaac said unto Jacob, come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not. Because at this point, he's kind of confused. He's like, hey, it seems like he's saying, well, he knows about the errand. He's my son. He just come back. And after I send him out, maybe it's him, maybe it's not. And Jacob went near unto Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy as his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. So I think that's probably where I'm going to stop for now. Just a little bit about this disguise, though. I just want to mention this. I'm not really teaching this like this is a doctrine or something. I'm just sharing some thoughts that I had about this. That we already looked at how basically Esau is a picture of the flesh. He's the natural man that's born first, right? They're twins, the two of them. They could, you know, they're together in the same womb. But Esau is a picture of the natural man that comes first. He's of the earth, earthy, right? Okay? Jacob being a picture of the spiritual man that's born afterward. And he's a supplanter. He's got his hand on Esau's heel, and he's trying to take the place of Esau. And guess what? That's according to the will of God. That we have a natural man who's born of the flesh, but you know what? We need to be born of the Spirit. And then guess what? Flesh and blood does not inherit the kingdom of God. Okay? God is not even trying to do that. He's given up on the flesh, okay? On this flesh. He's got to be reborn. He's got to be a new man. Okay? And there's a song that talks, the name of the song is called The Old Man is Dead. I don't know if you guys have ever heard it. But it talks about, you know, he looks the same. He's still wearing the same clothes, you know. On the outward, he looks the same. He looks just like the old man. But he said, on the inside, there's a brand new man. The old man is dead. Hey. Now here you see Jacob showing up, and you know what? He looks just like Esau. He's even wearing Esau's clothes. On the outside, he's like Esau. But he's a different man. He's a different man. And again, I place a little bit of blame on Isaac here for being deceived. He's feeling him. He's feeling what he feels like and smelling him. But he's not paying attention to the voice. And he even knows, like, hey, it's Jacob's voice, but these are the hands of Esau. And in the end, he went with the hands over the voice. But anyway, we'll continue this next time. There's a lot more really interesting spiritual things to look at here, but we're just about out of time. So we'll just wrap it up here and continue on next time. Thank you for being in Sunday school.